You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
You're listening to Serious Inquiries Only.
Hello and welcome to Serious Inquiries Only. This is episode 124. I'm your host, Thomas Smith. All right, well, this is not the most pleasant of episodes, to be frank. If you're following anything in the secular community, you've likely seen by now that Lawrence Krauss had an article written in BuzzFeed about him detailing multiple accounts by multiple different people, both named and unnamed, accusing him of various degrees and incidents of sexual harassment and misconduct. I, for one, believe the accusers, and it is not particularly close. There are a number of things to talk about around this. So here's my plan for today. I've said many times before that I believe women should be the ones we're listening to about this issue. They should be the ones leading the conversation. They are leading the conversation, and we need to listen. I want to recommend an excellent video by Rebecca Watson, link in the show notes. She talks about the Lawrence Krauss story. She was quoted in the BuzzFeed article, so that's an excellent person to listen to. Go check that out. Another good voice to check out would be Tracy, aka Godless Mama, who has been on the show recently, but she's started a podcast and she just did an episode called I've Had Enough, where she talks about Lawrence Krauss. I'm going to link that in the show notes as well. And of course, most of all, we need to be listening to the very credible accusations and accusers and eyewitnesses and corroborating witnesses in the article itself in BuzzFeed. We should have been doing this a long time ago, but we as a community have failed. We have fallen short. So for this episode, I very briefly am going to talk about my experience with Lawrence Krauss. Then I'm going to give a bulleted summary of the charges and the witnesses and the accusers and all of that for each of the counts in the article, because I think that's important. It's getting described very badly, and we will see and hear some of the people describing it very badly. They're saying, well, anonymous sources, et cetera, et cetera. Well, no. And I think this breakdown of all the accusations and their sources and how much corroboration we have for them is important, because I'm going to take a look at the frankly appalling response by Sam Harris and Matt Dillahunty. They were scheduled to go on stage with him. They ended up all mutually agreeing, according to them, that Krauss wouldn't appear on stage, which is a very small start. But what they go on to say just does not even cut it. And frankly, some subsequent behavior has really shown the depths of this problem. And I'm going to outline that in a bit. Then after that, I've got an interview with Monette Richards. It's a little more on the positive side of things. Now, she was quoted in not the BuzzFeed article, but the Gizmodo article. She used to work at CFI, Center for Inquiry. She has some direct experience with this and some indirect experience. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about her exciting new Kickstarter for secular women work. So at least we're ending with a bit of positivity in terms of things and people we can positively promote rather than have to be calling out and condemning. So that's the plan for today's show. And yeah, it sounds like a doozy, doesn't it? So to start, Lawrence Krauss was on this show, episode 25. I'm looking here. That looks like just about a year ago, like almost exactly a year ago. I considered it a hell of a get at the time, something I was proud of. I really was a fan of Lawrence Krauss in terms of his science work. I guess I can say I'm still a fan of his science work. His talks have always been incredibly fascinating. Some of the most fascinating that I've ever seen. But I had no idea about this behavior. I really, really didn't know. I wasn't familiar with some of these older things, like some of these that we'll see were blogged about in 2011, 13, various times that I never knew about. So a little while after he was on the show, I also met him at ReasonCon. I'm sure a lot of people listening did who were at ReasonCon. And I have to say that for my part, the behavior I witnessed at ReasonCon, now I didn't witness any sexual harassment or any kind of misconduct, but I did witness a general vibe that I didn't really like, to be honest. I was left feeling a bit creeped out by him, and it's not entirely surprising to now read all of these accounts and all of these accusations. Now, for my part, having learned this, despite Lawrence Krauss previously having been one of my heroes, he will never be on my show again for what little that does. I also will not be attending any conference that he is at or that he is a speaker at. In my book, he's no longer somebody we should look up to. This behavior is really disgusting. It's not what we should be promoting in our community, I don't think. And it's unfortunate. Again, I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss his talks, but I'm sure there are other people. Sean Carroll comes immediately to mind, but I'm sure there are others too. I think before we get to how Harrison Dillahunty handled the event that they had scheduled with him, I want to talk about these charges. Definitely read the article. It's all credit, of course, goes to the BuzzFeed reporters and for those who were brave enough to come forward. But what I think I've done here that I think will be useful is I've distilled it down to individual charges, how we know about them, and who has corroborated them. I think this will be really helpful, and it's very important. First up is Melody Hensley. By name, she is named. This is not anonymous. She was by name. She met Krauss very early on, a long time ago, and he asked if she was of age, and she found that creepy. He invited her to dinner, but instead of that, he asked her to come up to his hotel room first, and, quote, suddenly he lifted her by the arms and pushed her onto the bed beneath him, forcibly kissing her and trying to pull the crotch of her tights down. Hensley said she struggled to push him off. When he pulled out a condom, Hensley said she got out from under him and said, "I have to go," and rushed out of the room. She told her now husband at the time, and she told CFI, Center for Inquiry employees, and BuzzFeed has corroborated this with all of them. So this happened to her. She is named. She is not anonymous. She told her husband and other sources at the time, and BuzzFeed has corroborated this. And for each of these charges, by the way, BuzzFeed has gotten Krauss's response already. They quote Krauss as saying this was mutual and consensual. Next, we have Nora, which is a middle name. So I don't know. I guess you would call this pseudo-anonymous. We have a middle name, but semi-anonymous, I suppose. She was an undergrad at Case Western, and he teased her about guys who must always want to be asking her out. And one time she tried to interview him for a student publication. He closed the door to the office. He answered her questions with jokes, and he invited her to dinner, an undergrad. It's kind of odd. She wrote about it in the school paper. And then the dean, who, by the way, is a named source in this article and displayed some great behavior, this particular dean. So it's good to know there are some good people out there. He approached her and encouraged her to write a complaint formally because of what he saw in the paper. The emails between them were released to BuzzFeed. BuzzFeed has them. Krauss acknowledges the complaint. So he acknowledges it exists. And the school says, the school officially told BuzzFeed he was prohibited from making contact with her and had to get approval before setting foot on campus again. He left for ASU shortly after. So Case Western is referenced as a campus that he was banned from. The only thing that's a little confusing is how he could be banned from the university if that's where he was working. But I think from what I can read between the lines here is that by the time that ban was put into effect, he had already left for ASU. And so therefore the ban would have made sense if he was not an employee there. In 2012, Perimeter Institute received a sexual harassment claim against Krauss. They say as a result, he wouldn't be invited to return. That's, again, they were quoted. They said that to BuzzFeed. They wouldn't give any details of the complaint or who made it because of privacy. They did not want to out the person. Now, this one's a little interesting because Krauss says he claims that he's been invited back, which would negate the story or contradict the story. This is disturbing if true, because that would mean that they weren't sticking to what they said their solution was. I did a little digging. I can't find any videos from this Perimeter Institute of Krauss more recently than 2009. So I don't have any like video evidence that he was there after they said they weren't inviting him back. But what is interesting is I looked at the web archive and I found that there is a page, there's a Google result for his page on Perimeter's website. If you click on it, it has been deleted. I looked at a web archive, and there is a snapshot in October 2015 in which the page for Krauss is still there. And it's just a tiny little contact page, but the point is sometime between October 15 and now, they decided to delete their page. Now, I would guess it happened very recently once the story came out or just before the story came out since they were interviewed about it. But who knows? So it's possible they wanted to cover their tracks for the fact that maybe he was invited back and he shouldn't have been. But here are the facts that we absolutely know. We know that Perimeter Institute told BuzzFeed, an official from Perimeter Institute told BuzzFeed that they got a sexual harassment complaint in 2012 and that he wouldn't be invited to return. This next part is one of the worst parts, and it's incontrovertible, and it's his own words, his defense of Jeffrey Epstein. This is the next thing referenced in the article. In 2011, Krauss publicly defended Jeffrey Epstein, a wealthy financier who was convicted of soliciting prostitution from an underage girl and spent 13 months in a Florida jail. Epstein was one of the Origin Project's major donors, but Krauss told the Daily Beast his support of the financier was based purely on the facts. And here's a quote that just makes my blood absolutely boil, guys. As a scientist, I always judge things on empirical evidence, and he always has women ages 19 to 23 around him. But I've never seen anything else, so as a scientist, my presumption is whatever the problems were, I would believe him over other people. End quote. This is absolutely disgusting. This is Krauss using his reputation as a scientist to defend someone who was convicted. And by the way, Epstein pleaded guilty to soliciting prostitution from girls as young as 14. Not only was he convicted, he pleaded guilty. It wasn't even like, oh, a bad jury trial. No, he pleaded guilty. So as a scientist, what you would conclude is that you have not witnessed every moment of his life. You have not been around when he was soliciting prostitution from underage girls. What gets me so much about this one is not just that it's disgusting, but that he drags his, as a scientist, reputation into it. This really does damage to the scientific community. It completely fails basic logic to say, because you've only witnessed that he had women ages 19 to 23. I like how there's an upper limit, by the way. It's specifically 19 to 23. No, 24. That's too old. Because you have witnessed only that, therefore, what he pleaded guilty to couldn't have happened. So that's his own words. That's incontrovertible. That's not only his own words. That's the guy who pleaded guilty's own words. There's nothing to argue with there. It's all plain as day. Next, we have Jen McCrate, who described in her blog at one point the experiences of two unnamed women. One is now named, and it's Melody Hensley, who is the first person we already talked about. A second is referred to only as A. BuzzFeed spoke to her personally, and we have her account. This person, A, alleges he kept touching her thigh under a table. She shifted away. He did it again. She crossed her legs. He did it again. She eventually had to turn her whole body, and he did it again. So then she left. She told named person Benjamin Wurst, who then confirmed with BuzzFeed when they talked to him. So while she's technically anonymous, she has talked to both Jen McCrate and she's talked to Benjamin Wurst, who are named people. They're not anonymous. And they have confirmed with BuzzFeed and BuzzFeed has confirmed with her. They have spoken to A. This is not the same as an anonymous person accused him of something. In full fairness, they also have Krauss's explanation. Krauss says she came onto him and invited him in the hot tub. Robin Cornwell, who, in fairness, is a name source as well, a friend of Krauss, corroborates his story. So he and a friend have an explanation that it was all consensual. The victim and the victim's friend say, no way. Then we have the 2011 cruise incident. We have an email from Patricia Beaucamp, if that's how you pronounce it, of Center for Inquiry, saying, quote, this is an email they have, I really don't want Krauss on this trip. His behavior on past trips has been offensive to many. The article says this refers to an incident where Krauss propositioned a woman to join him and his now wife for sex. She found this very uncomfortable. Then President Ron Lindsay confirmed the account with the guest. He apologized to the guest, and then they invited Krauss back anyway. Krauss denies the entire thing even happened. Now that seems odd that the director and another person high up in Center for Inquiry would say people don't like his behavior, we don't want him on the trip. The director, the then president Ron Lindsay, would have confirmed the account with the guest and apologized, and then Krauss says no, none of it ever happened. Who are you going to believe in that situation? 2016, Melbourne, Australia, there was a convention. An unnamed person alleges that Krauss grabbed her breast during a photo op. Three named sources. So, sure, anonymous person. However, three named sources confirm they saw it. Melanie Thompson, a friend of the show, Michael Marshall. He's actually one of the named sources in this article. Some people notice that. And speaker at the conference, Joe Alabaster. Not all anonymous accusations are equal. It's as simple as that. There's a difference between we have spoken, BuzzFeed has spoken to someone, that someone has had three other named witnesses to what they saw. There's also a picture, by the way. Now, the picture doesn't capture actual contact, but all of the witnesses say it was as he was going to touch her breast. Now, Krauss has an elaborate excuse involving he always puts his hand up to stop the flash of a camera. And that's his excuse. A friend of the woman involved filed complaints to three schools that Krauss is involved with. And they said, ASU said they didn't have enough evidence to substantiate since they didn't have the person's name, so they couldn't talk to her. And the photo didn't actually show contact, as I said. Now, I don't necessarily blame them for that decision. When they look at the evidence they have and it's not enough, you know, they don't actually have proof. Unfortunately, I think that you do need some sort of due process when it comes to an official proceeding like that. So I understand that. However, in what is one of the most damning pieces of evidence in the entire article, Krauss says, quote, both universities independently concluded that the report was unsubstantiated and fabricated with malicious intent, end quote. Both schools told BuzzFeed this is wrong. They said we absolutely would not characterize it as a fabrication. We just didn't have enough actual firsthand evidence. And then finally, the article ends with four unnamed former employees of the Origins Project describing bad workplace behavior. So 2015, 19-year-old left uncomfortable when he looked her head to toe and smirked and said he liked the short jumper she was wearing. Two eyewitnesses confirmed with BuzzFeed, by the way. 2016, a staffer posted on Facebook in a post that BuzzFeed had access to that Krauss suggested she should dress up like a hula girl while advertising for an event. Another employee said it was so bad that she kept written record of offensive incidents, and they involved sexist comments about women having babies and being inconvenient, stuff like that. None of them made reports to the university. They didn't report it for whatever reason. Now, maybe they felt like they wouldn't be taken seriously. Maybe they didn't want to cause a stir or controversy with the top guy at this program. There are plenty of reasons why people don't report things. However, why would they not do that and then just make it up, including written record and people they have corroborated with who were eyewitnesses at the time? What's in it for them? So I wanted to break it down this way with just getting to the kind of the bullet points of how, who, what, when, and what evidence we have. Because given that wide range of accounts, what do you think are the odds that all these people made it up? Krauss's answer has been, well, you know, as a famous person, this happens. You get stuff made up about you. That is one astronomical coincidence that all these people would have had this happen. Some reported it at the time. Some didn't. Many had friends they told who also corroborated. That's a lot of people involved in a conspiracy. For what? For what purpose? What do they gain by trying to bring someone down who's famous? Do they get money from him? No, there's no lawsuit. It's the opposite. Everybody who tries to bring this to attention, including Melody Hensley, gets threatened with lawsuits. Melody Hensley had to take down her blog post that detailed some of these charges because she got threatened, and she doesn't have the resources to deal with a legal lawsuit like that. By the way, the same thing that is actually happening right now, Richard Carrier is suing people into silence for things, for talking about things that he himself admitted. So when you actually read this, I do not know how you can stick your head in the sand and ignore it. This is quite simply not the same as random Twitter egg says, Krauss raped me or something. That is not what this is. This is not, oh, anonymous people just lobbing, you know, insults and charges willy-nilly. No, this is extensive. It's documented. It involves universities corroborating it in an official capacity. You cannot say you value the Me Too movement and then also say, well, I can't really say anything about this. There's no, I don't know. We'll see. Ooh, disturbing if true. One of the members, Leonie Hilliard, in the SIO member Facebook group, which, by the way, if you're on Patreon or on the website, make sure to request access to this group. Make sure to include the relevant information so I let you in. Anyway, Leonie put it really, really well. And I have to give her credit. She said, this is the atheist equivalent of thoughts and prayers. Now, I love Seth Andrews, but I have to say, when his response is what she had in mind, his response and Matt's and Sam's, all three of them, when you say, well, disturbing if true, alarming if true. Frankly, what people are hearing is thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. They're hearing, well, I want to be able to still potentially benefit from the big name of Lawrence Krauss if we can get away with it. But I'm not going to make a statement either way. I'm not going. It's like you're just paying a tiny amount of lip service to the idea that the accusers could be credible, but you don't want to say. I'm sorry, but that doesn't cut it. That doesn't cut it, especially in this case. Look, again, if this is one person, if this is one accusation, no corroborating evidence, this is the number one douchebag annoying comment I get on Twitter, which is when I say I believe these accusations, some asshole will say, oh, I accuse you, Thomas, of raping me. I expect you to resign now and step down and give up your podcast. No, moron, that's not the system I'm advocating for. No one is advocating for a system in which a random Twitter asshole with very clear motivations to fake an accusation makes an accusation and then we just imprison that person or they give up their job and all their money. No one is advocating for that. But I would like someone to give me one conceivable story that explains all the facts we have and that renders Lawrence Krauss as not a serial sexual harasser and potentially sexual abuser in some instances. I mean, the first account probably borders on assault, and the account of touching the leg, that is certainly repeated unwanted contact with someone. Tell me a conceivable story which explains all the facts, all the corroboration, all the different entities involved. They're all making it up? That's ludicrous. If you want to believe that, why aren't you a flat earther? Why aren't you a moon landing was faked type of person? And yet, the very people making this claim are the quote-unquote skeptics in our community. I'm hearing from them nonstop on Twitter. I know it's hopefully not you listening. I know it's not the whole community, but I'll tell you what, it's a lot of them. You should see the comments under the article. You should see the comments under under the video that of Matt and Sam. I mean, it's a large portion. So now let's look at how Sam Harris and Matt Dillahunty responded again when they were on stage. This is February 23rd, just a day or two after the article had come out. They were scheduled to be on with Krauss. They all agreed Krauss would not appear, and they talked about Dillahunty and Harris talked about it for about 15 minutes that we have on YouTube so far as the only recording I'm finding. I'm going to link it. Watch it if you're curious. I obviously can't play all of 15 minutes. I'm going to play probably a few clips, but I'll start by summarizing. So Sam opens it up with the reason why Lawrence Krauss isn't there. And guess what? It's not because he's been credibly accused of sexual harassment by multiple people. No, it's not that. It's not that this article has made it clear he's not a safe person to have at events and to be around and to promote as a leader. No, it's not that. It's that he would need to change the conversation. If he were at that event, then the conversation would need to be about the harassment. And Sam thinks it would be unfair to the audience to not talk about the harassment. And he also thinks it would be unfair to Lawrence Krauss to require him to have an answer ready this soon. The overall attitude from both of them is one of agnosticism. It's like, well, there are rumors, but we're not taking a position either way. There's no position taken either way. Now, you guys know I have criticized Sam Harris a lot. I historically used to be a huge fan. Now, not so much, especially not now. I consider Sam to pretty much be a lost cause on these issues, so I'm actually going to focus on what Matt Dillahunty said. Because I've actually talked to Matt before. He's someone who I think is reachable. He's someone who I previously have said is on the right side of certain issues. I think his heart is in the right place. I think he professes to be pro-social justice, feminism, even pro-Me Too. And I really want to emphasize that I hope Matt can change his mind on this. I hope that he can maybe recognize that he fell short. I'm really not interested in trying to smear someone, but what Matt and Sam did and what they have done and not done afterward, I hate to say it, it is the very behavior that has allowed this abuse to continue. I want to start with a couple positives. Now, Matt Dillahunty said he likes the Me Too moment. In general, he thinks it's good and it needed to happen. And I believe him. I'll take his word on that. I also believe him, and I think he makes a good point when he said that we're not dealing with a court of law and you don't need that level of evidence for this kind of thing. That's a good point. And it's also like another one of the top things that people keep yelling at me on Twitter about is it needs to be proven in a court of law to take it seriously. No, that's not how it works. So those are two positives. I'm glad that he said those. That's good. I want to try to give credit where I can. But the first words out of Matt's mouth in this whole event are this.
I think the four-hour thing,
yeah,
that was me, and that was incredibly frustrating because what happened was I woke up yesterday. There were several people who sent me links to the article. Then some people called. I grabbed my bags. I jumped on a plane. I flew from Austin to Phoenix. I landed, and I checked social media, and the first thing I saw was Matt has gone dark on social media. And I was... It's been 5 hours, and three of that was on a plane. Now, I love the modern world where you have quick and easy access to everything, but we're getting to the point where, you know, we want responses, and you need to address this right now. And my answer is, hey, I was on a plane, but even if I wasn't, maybe I was in the hospital, maybe I was sitting in my recliner, maybe I was sleeping, maybe I don't check social media every 10 seconds, or maybe I was aware of all of this, which is the case, and I wanted time to think and formulate a reasonable response rather than just being reactionary and feeding the fire.
So someone he has shared the stage with, was going to share a stage with, has been credibly accused by multiple people, by, again, substantiated witnesses, everything, official accounts, universities, all of this. It's corroborated. The article is not that long. It takes 7 minutes to read. He even says he was already aware of it. He was already aware of it. And I'm sorry, Matt, but your first response is, boy, people on Twitter sure are stupid, aren't they? They want me to respond right away. How dare they? Laugh line. I really think the first thing that's, and by the way, Sam should have said this too. Not just Matt. Sam should have said, first things first, our hearts go out to any victims who may have been sexually abused or harassed by the guy that we shared a stage with. I mean, come on, Matt. You've managed to make yourself the victim in the first thing you say about this. And I promise you, I promise Matt, I promise anyone listening, I want to be on Matt's side. I like Matt. I really want him. I'm not just cherry picking to try to be upset. If he had at some point later in the conversation ever had acknowledged the victims and what happened and had made any statement like that, I wouldn't have been merely policing the fact that he didn't do it first. I would have let it go. But he didn't do it at all. Now, this video was from February 23rd. It is right now, February 28th, he has not responded. He has not only not responded about it or made any statement about it, he has shown incredible hostility. He has blocked people who asked him about it. Blocked them. He's cursed them out and blocked them. Matt's attitude has been, no one is entitled to my time, I don't owe you anything. That's his attitude on this. On his public Facebook page, Matt had the time yesterday to post five photos of Virginia Hughes, one of the authors of the BuzzFeed article, who tried to contact him to get a comment. Now, someone gave her his number and he was upset by that. It was his private number. And I totally understand that. That sucks. I understand his frustration. But he also refused to give comment. And he keeps saying that she didn't respect his boundaries and his boundaries have been violated. And more than a few people have pointed out, once again, you have time to make a post about your boundaries being violated and when you were the victim here. But you don't have time to make any sort of comment on someone you worked closely with and who you benefited from, who you shared a stage with. I'm going to go back to the start here, and I think it's critical to see how much Sam Harris pushes this into, and unfortunately, I really think Matt plays into this, pushes this into a, okay, no comment about this. However, here's a bunch of ways that we can kind of undermine it. Again, this is more Harris, and I'll play some clips.
I think this is a very serious business. We have a colleague and a friend and a person with a very serious and much cherished scientific reputation under assault now. And if you've read that BuzzFeed article, you'll see that there's a wide range of allegations, some of which, if true, are fairly grave, and some of which seem fairly spurious. And there's very little effort in that article to delineate the differences there.
Yeah, Lawrence Krauss is under assault, guys. He's under assault. And then also, very little effort made to differentiate. Let me read a quote from the article. Quote, one of many wide-ranging allegations, wide-ranging, of Krauss's inappropriate behavior over the last decade, including groping women, ogling and making sexist jokes to undergrads, and telling an employee at Arizona State University, where he is a tenured professor, that he was going to buy her birth control so she didn't inconvenience him with maternity leave, end quote. I wonder how stupid of a reader would we have to be to think that this article is telling us it's all the same thing. There's no punishment prescribed in the article. There's no sentencing in the article. It's just, here's a range, and it said, quote, many wide-ranging allegations. End quote. I also really would love to ask Sam which allegations, if true, aren't a big deal, like are spurious. I mean, there's maybe one or two that you could say, like, all right, you know, if it was just that, then it would merely be creepy. But spurious means fake, false or fake. I don't know which ones there is he seeing that could be fake or that he knows somehow are fake. Again, one of the biggest frustrations with all of this is, oh, well, no comment, except there's a bunch of fake ones. And here's some ways I can undermine potentially the allegations. I really would have respected it more if they just said, we're not going to talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. Anyway, after Matt complains about people on Twitter, then we get to what Sam sees as the heart of the issue. And I want to, again, give some credit here. I don't want to misrepresent anything. Sam generically says something supportive of Me Too, but then constantly undermines it later on. But I'm going to play it so that people don't think, again, the Sam Harris defenders won't think I'm just cherry picking.
My default is to believe women here. If a guy is creepy, the onus is on him. And when there are differences of opinion there, that's my bias. And I actually do think it's a bias because it blinds me to those occasions where we really are in a gray area, where there are legitimate differences of perception, where we're talking about bad flirting or misreading of social cues.
So there, positive statement, and then very quickly he undermines it by saying, I think it's a bias because I miss the times when, you know, I should actually be just listening to the man, essentially. Then he jumps to what's becoming a go-to with a lot of people, mainly men, and Me Too, which is, oh, sure, Harvey Weinstein was bad. We all agree on that. And one thing I think is kind of disturbing is compare the reaction of the audience to when he says that versus back when Matt, you know, complained about Twitter or when Matt said, let's wait for a reasonable response and the huge applause that got.
Generically, just to be on the record about all this, I think it's, you know, the Me Too moment is long overdue with respect to shining the light on people like Harvey Weinstein. Right, I think it's fantastic, and people, Harvey Weinstein himself, and people like him, belong in prison. I mean, this is, we're talking about criminal conduct that was enabled by vast numbers of sycophantic people for reasons that are very difficult to understand.
So, smattering of clapping here and there for that, but there's always a but. Whenever someone in this Me Too moment says, well, sure, Harvey Weinstein, there's always a but coming up.
But there's a continuum there. We have, and what's damaging at this moment is that the Me Too movement is showing itself liable to wrap up people like Harvey Weinstein and Garrison Keillor and Aziz Ansari in the same sentence, right? As though there are no gradations between, you know, in the Ansari case, it's until more information is in, it just seems like a bad and awkward date. And that is being lumped literally in the same sentence with something that is clearly rape, and then there's everything in between. So we have, if people are unwilling to make those distinctions, we've completely lost our ethical mooring. And there are people who are unwilling to make those distinctions. There are people who just want to burn it all down.
Yes, that's the problem. That's the major issue. Finally, Sam got to what he wanted to say all along. Okay, yeah, no, Weinstein, sure. But who will make the distinctions? We need someone who will make the distinctions. This is what a lot of feminists and people who are fans of Me Too are rightfully getting very annoyed with. We know the distinctions. Everybody knows. You can find someone on Twitter. That's the extent of this argument. You can find someone on Twitter who said, oh, all of them, throw them into the sea or something. Cool. They don't have any power. And remember back a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago by now, when I said, I think this Garrison Keillor thing is weird. I wonder if there's more there. We're never going to just take his word for it. Well, then a few weeks later, I read you that there was more. There was more there. What a coincidence that someone like Harris hasn't kept up to date with that. It was enough for him to hear Keillor say, oh, I touched someone's back, and that's why I was fired. Well, there's actually even more since I last told you about that. I'm seeing a Washington Post article where it looks like the woman has, through her attorney, because she wants to remain anonymous, rightfully so, because you get abuse hurled at you forever if you try to come forward about any of this. It's hundreds of emails from 2004 to 2017 where he describes sexual fantasies and stuff like that. She says she's quoted of saying Keillor had the power to provide or take away job assignments and opportunities, she said, adding that she never wanted anything but a collegial relationship with the host. He also acknowledged several times that the power imbalance between us, recognized how his conduct could be offensive when it was coming from the person for whom I work, she told the AP. He was my mentor and employer, she said. As such, he had power over me. Every time I said no or tried to avoid him, I feared I was saying no to my future. Keillor's accuser told the Star Tribune through her attorney that she had warned the host and other superiors at a Prairie Home Companion as early as 2011 that his alleged advances were unwelcome. By 2015, she had made four other reports about Keillor's behavior. This is the exact reason there are laws to protect employees from being subjected to situations they don't feel comfortable in, but feel compelled to comply with, the lawyer said. Not only that, MPR, Minnesota Public Radio, has said previously that investigators from an outside firm looked into dozens of allegations from sexually inappropriate incidents in their probe of Keillor. The station also made clear in a statement last month that the complaint came from a woman who worked for Garrison on a Prairie Home Companion. An NPR spokeswoman told the AP on Saturday that the station stands by its handling of the matter. Our decision, quote, was not based on flirtations or fantasies, but based on facts confirming unacceptable behavior in the workplace by a person in a position of power over someone who worked for him, end quote. Yes, he behaved inappropriately at the workplace. He lost his job. There was an extensive investigation interviewing dozens of people. There was corroborating email. What are we worried about here? If you're worried about some social media thing, like, oh, there's some people on social media who maybe said something about Garrison Keillor. Yes, but that exists on both sides of it. Victims who credibly accuse people with corroborating evidence still face all kinds of harassment online. So again, if your argument comes down to, I've found some people on social media who are wrong about this, we can play that game forever. There's all kinds of people harassing legitimate victims who are just trying to get any sort of justice. All day long. This happens all day long online. Yes, people online suck. We can argue that on both sides. But systematically, what happened is Garrison Keillor lost his job for being inappropriate at the workplace. And we've talked about Aziz Ansari. Again, short of some idiot on the internet, no one thinks Aziz Ansari is Harvey Weinstein. Nobody thinks he should be in prison. People think, wow, his behavior wasn't really cool. It was kind of bad, actually. What's so condescending and what is frustrating a lot of people I talk to, a lot of feminists I talk to, and even on this show, they put it better than I can. But what is so frustrating is men who feel the need to explain this as though all the idiots who are a part of Me Too don't understand that there are differences here. people do understand there are differences. And this whole literally in the same sentence thing, do you think people are that stupid? If I say, wow, two people were arrested today. There was a murderer and a vandal. Whoa, you cannot put them in the same sentence, dude. You just totally ruined that vandal's reputation. Like, no, we do. Okay, put a period or something. Does that, what does that change? And if your answer is, I like Me Too, but only for rape, then you're not a fan of Me Too. You don't get it. Me Too is about a reckoning for a wide range of behavior and abuse of power and sexual harassment and pretty much everything contained in the BuzzFeed article about Lawrence Krauss is part of that. That's very legitimately part of Me Too. Now, should Lawrence Krauss be arrested? I don't think so. I don't think anyone in the article said so. I don't think any of his accusers said so. Point it out if I've missed it. I don't know of anyone who is saying he should be arrested. I don't know of anyone who is saying he is the same as Harvey Weinstein. But inappropriate behavior at the workplace is inappropriate behavior at the workplace. I very much think that a lot of these complaints, if they were handled better, should have probably resulted in Krauss being fired from some positions. And I don't know the details. Again, some of these weren't filed. Complaints weren't filed. You know, I'm not going to say anything about, you know, who dropped the ball there or if there's a legitimate reason that victims felt like they couldn't come forward and thus there was a systematic problem. I don't know all those answers. I wish we could know all those answers. It would be nice. But here's where Matt, I think, really steps in it. And again, full amount of charity. And I said this on Twitter and he actually responded, which I'm going to get to. But I said, OK, this might have been a mistake. This might have been a foot and mouth scenario. Let's listen to this.
My default is to, similarly, if somebody tells me something about something they experienced, and it doesn't just have to be scenarios like this. If somebody tells me they saw an angel or they had a ghost visit them, I believe that they are honestly trying to relay their perception of that experience. That does not mean that I believe that they actually saw a ghost. It does not mean that I've reached a conclusion about who was in the wrong in this particular scenario.
Equating victims coming forward, multiple victims, multiple witnesses, corroborating evidence, comparing it with ghost stories. Come on, man. I mean, and I thought, again, so I tweeted, I said this. I know Matt's heart is generally in the right place, but maybe don't lead off a discussion into Me Too with saying you're willing to listen to people's personal testimony, you know, like with ghost stories. Maybe don't draw that comparison, I said. And Matt found it. I didn't tag him or anything, but he found it. And he said, sorry that skepticism and fairness gets equated to humoring ghost stories in your eyes. And I said that they were his. I don't know if he forgot that he said that, but I said, Matt, that was your words. Do you not remember saying it? I was hoping it was a foot in mouth kind of thing. And he said, no, you're suggesting it was dismissive. It wasn't. Later on, he says, I wasn't equating. I was pointing out that I'm willing to believe by default that people honestly convey their perception of events. That isn't enough to reach a conclusion, though it's enough for serious consideration and not dismissal. To which I said, I'm really not wanting to be uncharitable to you, but given that zero people have ever been correct about seeing ghosts, don't you think it was not the best comparison? And he finally, his final reply is, it wasn't a comparison of similarity, it was a contrast. It was a statement about what I'm willing to believe about people. I even believe ghost claims are honest attempts to relay experience. Done here, not playing the cherry pick for negatives game. I just want to note for the record, if he had said, oh man, yeah, maybe not the best analogy to use. Done. 100% done. Okay, misspoke. People misspeak. No BFD. But again, he's saying, I believe that people are being honest about their experiences, but using an experience that people are always wrong about is really belittling to all these victims and to all these people who are corroborated and everything. It's belittling to say, just like with people who describe ghost experiences, I believe that you're telling the truth about what you think happened. I don't understand how somebody could stand by that comparison. It's just an awful comparison to make. He then goes on, in fairness, to say positive words about Me Too. He says he's glad about it. And again, this is why I've liked Matt on this issue before. He's paid lip service to this idea, and I took it as genuine. I still take it as genuine. I just don't think he realizes how much he's compromising that same objective.
And the problem with that sort of explosion is that there's potentially a lot of collateral damage. And I'm not saying who is or isn't collateral damage, but I can empathize with that frustration. And for me, once upon a time, we knew from statistical analysis that false accusations of sexual assault were incredibly unlikely because there were so many more that happened that were never reported. And now we're building a system where there are likely to be more accusations, which just by default increases the number of false accusations or questionable areas.
Here's the thing about this Krauss article, though. All these accusations are from once upon a time. They're all from before the Me Too movement. And again, it's, well, there may be collateral damage. I'm not going to say who. I'm not going to say it's Lawrence Krauss, but there may be. It's all this setup for undermining this article. The minute there are false accusations, the minute someone is put into prison or fired or whatever, and we've turns out to be false, that's going to be a big deal. And we'll all recognize and we'll say, that sucks. That's bad. No one's in favor of that I know of. But when you're talking overall about a system and where we are in a balance right now, and even right now, but especially 2 years ago, the balance was virtually everybody who perpetrates these crimes gets away with it. Virtually everybody. And I shouldn't say just crimes, but like workplace harassment, all that. Virtually everybody gets away with it. And now that we're ticking slightly more toward, okay, maybe some people aren't getting away with it. By the way, there are still high-profile people who have been credibly accused who still have their jobs, still are in positions of power, are still getting away with it even today.
And there's going to be some bad that comes along with that. So I'm incredibly encouraged by the fact that people are speaking up, by they're saying enough is enough. And yet I recognize that this comes with negatives as well. And I think that my frustration right now is with the people who either don't want to recognize potential negatives, or the people who say, it doesn't matter if there's negatives, you know, because we've suffered too long, we've taken too much, and now we're going
to
do this.
Okay, sure. Well, we can recognize it to make you happy. There could be a negative situation. There could be a false accusation. There could be. So what are we left with? Okay, well, we still need to believe when there's multiple credible accusations like there are in this BuzzFeed article, we still need to believe those. So unless you're going to point me to specifically if it's Krauss or somebody else, like where are these issues? What is the good of this? No matter where we are, there are going to be trade-offs. There are going to be trade-offs between do we allow people to get away with terrible behavior? And then that, so extreme end of the dial is we never believe anybody. Everybody gets away with it. Extreme other end of the dial is we believe anybody, even just a Twitter egg, we believe them. Okay, sure. We don't want to be on either end of that. I get that. Where do you think we are now? Where do we need to be? I think we are still not as far as we need to be, frankly. And actually, the way I think it specifically manifests is that a chunk of our society is where we need to be, and a chunk is like on the opposite end of the spectrum and is not believing anybody and is saying crazy things like Bill Cosby was still innocent and all and just stuff like that. I really think we're divided in where we are. Now, effectively, we're moving the needle a little bit, and that's good. But I think it's because one side is dragging the other, kicking and screaming, and it doesn't always work. Roy Moore, there was no problem there. He was able to still almost be elected. And Al Franken, he was kicked out. So, you know, I think we've just divided. We sort of split in where we are. All right, final clip. Here we go.
I want to do everything I can to empower victims to speak up and to change the world around them and deal with the additional damage and confusion that comes along with it. Yeah. I'm not pretending I have an answer.
Yeah, well, we totally agree there, but we have to balance that with what we're seeing on social media now and in journalism and in organs of often pseudo-journalism like yeah. BuzzFeed. And so like there were so many tells in this article of bad faith.
So at the beginning there, when Matt says, I want to do what I can to enable people to come forward, I believe you, Matt. What you have to do is in this situation, when a colleague, someone you've appeared on stage with multiple times, someone whose audience you're benefiting from and all that, when they are credibly accused in an article that's well-sourced, that has lots of both named and unnamed and corroboration and email and all that, what you need to do is say, I believe them. I believe them. Doesn't mean you have to make the crazy statement of I believe any accuser. No. You read the article. You knew about it. Why don't you believe them? I really want to know, why don't you believe that there's more than enough here to make a case for sexual harassment and misconduct? He is banned from two universities. He's demonstrably lying, as I pointed out in several of the cases. He defended someone who pled guilty to soliciting underage girls. I know it's hard. I know it's you're with the audience. I know you're benefiting from the tour. Believe me, that's a lot of pressure. It really is, and it sucks that falls on you. And let's face it, Sam Harris dropped that ball right onto you. Sam Harris failed, absolutely failed. But that's the truth. Honestly, if you really do care about enabling people to come forward, maybe take a second to recognize how many women in that BuzzFeed article said, yeah, I left the skeptic movement. I got nowhere. I told someone they didn't believe me, I did, et cetera, et cetera. I left. I don't even feel like being in it anymore. I got harassed out of it. Spare a thought for them. Spare a comment for them. And then Sam Harris at the end saying, oh, there's so many telltale signs of bad faith in this article. Oh, come on. Yes, there are a couple rude sentences about the skeptic movement. I agree. You know what? They're kind of rude. Seems like somebody in there is not a fan. Now let's take off our tinfoil hats and recognize that doesn't mean, because there's a few rude sentences about the skeptic movement, that doesn't mean that the authors also fabricated a bunch of sources who are both named and unnamed. And by the way, they also fabricated emails that long predate this, and they fabricated the fact that he was banned from two schools and all that. Come on! And to round it all out, Matt Dillahunty has been having pretty shocking tantrums on Facebook. On his public page, I've got screenshots from Ryan Bell. He blocked Ryan Bell, the Year Without God guy. He blocked him on Facebook and on Twitter for commenting on The Reporter. Again, the thread where, again, Matt has all kinds of time to curse out and respond to people who comment about a BuzzFeed reporter who texted him. Seems to have all kinds of energy for that. Well, I just realized how long I've been going, and so I'm not going to read more screenshots, but he's cursing people out, he's blocking people, and it's all because there seems to be, as just an observer and someone who follows Matt and has spoken positively about him all the time before this, there seems to be a weird hypersensitivity going on here to anyone who would dare suggest that he should comment on the Krause thing. It's all on his public page. You can look at it and judge for yourself. Anyway, in closing this out, I would say, yeah, sure, Matt, you don't owe anyone anything personally. I can't go and say, hey, Matt, give me a statement. You owe me a statement. But I would argue that you owe it to your principles. I would argue that for the sake of consistency with the principles you've talked about and have said you represent regarding Me Too, I would say a few words about the victims were warranted. Saying I believe them would be warranted. I would say that at the very least, not participating in this ridiculous conversation with Sam that was seemingly all geared toward, well, sure, Me Too sometimes, but not this time. Anyway, the way I feel about this is shitty. You know, Matt accused me of cherry picking to find the negatives. Well, no, I would love, you know what I would have loved? Is if Matt just said, yeah, I believe the victims, and that would have been amazing. I would have loved to see what Sam would have said. I would have loved to see what the audience would have said. I would have loved something, Matt. I really would have. I don't want there to be negatives. I don't want there to be a system perpetuated which scares victims into silence. I don't want any of this. It gets your fans mad at me. All this tweeting, it gets you have a bajillion more fans than I do. It just gets them mad at me. It just gets me more harassment. I don't want to have to do any of this. And frankly, I hope I'm wrong. You know, tell me if I'm wrong, Matt. Somebody tell me if I'm wrong. I would rather be wrong. I'd just be like, ooh, thank God someone who is a hero of mine isn't perpetuating the same shitty sexist system of not believing a bunch of victims when they come forward and have corroborating evidence and all that. I would love nothing more. All right, well, that was really unpleasant. Fortunately, though, I have an interview with Monette Richards. This was recorded before I did all this. She wasn't privy to the Sam Harris Matt Dillahunty reaction, otherwise I would have gotten her thoughts on it. So she hasn't heard the beginning of this episode. Just in case people are pissed off at something I said, I don't want to implicate her. So here was a very delightful and great recording with Monette Richards. Monette, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I know you you had the last word in the Gizmodo article, so triumphantly. Yeah. But before we get to that, I was wondering if you wanted to give our listeners a brief overview of your bio and kind of who you are and what you've been doing in this skeptic space.
Sure. As I like to put it, I was raised by hippie wolves. And about, 2010, I started really getting involved in atheist activism, secular activism. It wasn't really until 2012 when CFI had the first Women in Secularism that I really got involved on the grassroots level. It was right at the time that the first, great rifts started appearing, and they were the only organization doing anything like that. And it turned out that they had a chapter that met a block from my house, so I said, I have to take that over. So now I am the president of the CFI.
That sounds sinister. Was it like a game of Risk or something? That sounds pretty.
Yeah, I put up all my purple troops? Pieces yeah. right by the library. it was a bloodless coup,
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
yeah. And I've been on the board of Secular Woman since 2012, and I'm currently serving as president of that. And Secular Woman is a national organization of men and women whose primary goal is to amplify the voices of women, both within of secular women, both within the movement and without.
That's pretty critical at a time like this, I'd say. What has your experience with both Me Too been, and then in light of this huge news about Lawrence Krauss, which, well, I guess, quote unquote news, we can say.
Right.
It seems like it was something that was known by a lot of people for a while.
Okay. First, to back up to the Me Too thing, it's lovely to see the momentum that women have gotten, and the experience of listening to women has become a thing, because, we've had a huge history of bitches lie. I mean, that's just how we pretty much look at all accusations is, oh, well, she's making it up because of, or it's regret sex or whatever. So watching Me Too come about, and people, and when I say people, I say a lot, mostly men, start going, oh, well, maybe they are telling the truth. It's kind of refreshing in that sort of ouchy, God, that hurts sort of way. But it's, it's good to see that we're making momentum. But, then we also run into, okay, let's take it to Lawrence Krauss, where, yes, it's not news. It's not new news. It's just public news now. So people actually have to face it, that it was actually put out there, that the information was all put in one place, not just the women who made accusations, but campuses who said that he's no longer welcome. And people have to face up that, okay, you got me, it's public, now we have to address it. It's interesting to see people's reactions to it, because it's very, very similar to watching the left's reactions to Al Franken's accusers versus the right's reactions to Roy Moore's. The people over there going, Al Franken didn't do anything wrong, those women are making it up just to try and get him out of office. And then at the same time going, how can those Republican women support Roy Moore? And the Republican women are going, those women made it up. And looking at the people for Al Franken going, how can they support Al Franken? So it's Me Too is still in that, okay, fine, we'll believe it until it's somebody we like. So yeah, we still have some steps to go.
Yeah, totally. And it, I almost wish that Weinstein weren't a part of Me Too in a way, because now that's the go-to. It's always, well, Weinstein, sure, but I didn't realize it would be anybody else that I have to worry about. Like, it just seems like that's the easy straw man of, okay, sure, Me Too made sense for Weinstein because he was awful, but not this person. It seems to be the go-to now.
Well, I think, honestly, I think any level that you have of a person who was the initial Me Too, to be very specific, Me Too came before Weinstein, but that was the one that really hit the peak and started moving. But yeah, any level, you're going to have that. Even if it was somebody who was the catalyst that was a groper, you would still have other people going, oh, well, yeah, him, but not this person who's telling sexist jokes and lewd comments to you at work. So I think he was awful. There are lots of awful people, but he still had how many years of his career and how many women before he hit that point, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you're totally right. It probably would come down, whoever the next in line it was, it would be, well, okay, that person, sure, but not this person. I've been really disappointed with the reaction that I've gotten, at least on Twitter. I'm not sure if I anticipated it or not. I was hoping maybe that in the light of how many people have come forward with Me Too, and maybe to put it in a really skeptic-y way, I would hope that these skeptic-y people would have adjusted their prior probabilities. For people who are kind of ignorant about it, you know, and I'm a, you know, privileged male. I don't see all this stuff because I'm not a target of it. Seeing people tell their stories and realize like, oh my gosh, this is incredibly prevalent. Like, we need to adjust our prior probabilities for how often we thought this was happening. And if you do that, like a good skeptic, I think you'd realize, okay, well, I need to change the way I react to these stories a little bit.
Right. If, you know, a good skeptic, you know, hyper skeptic's going to hyper constantly. And, you know, because the saying is you need what extraordinary amount of evidence for an extraordinary claim. And the interesting thing about you saying that is, you know, we have the numbers. We have the numbers of how often women get harassed.
Yeah.
But it really doesn't hit you until women have to tell their stories again. And then, you know, you hear them and you hear the details and you start thinking, wow, that is really gross and awful that they have to go through that. Apparently there are still a lot of people out there who, you know, don't think that it's as bad as we say it is. And disappointed, I guess, but it's kind of par for the course for me. You know, we've known that they're out there and we could pretty much point to who they are. And
yeah. So is this somebody, so was Lawrence Krauss on your radar? Was this something that was pretty widely known?
Lawrence Krauss was the first name I heard of in this capacity when I joined the movement.
In the capacity as in like a whisper network kind of thing? Or?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. He was the absolute first name that cropped up. And so, yeah. It wasn't new for us. You know, we knew, I knew personally some of the stories, you know, firsthand accounts of the stories that happen. Plus, you know, I'm local to Case Western Reserve. So, you know, knowing one of the campuses that he's not allowed back on. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't sound normal to be banned from a campus, but that's just me. Is that how normal is that?
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, it's the fact that they did it quietly.
Yeah.
You know, so he still gets to preserve that bit of, you know, it's like shuffling a priest.
Yeah. Gosh, it really is like that.
Yeah. Which, you know, kind of brings up those same skeptics that want evidence of all the stuff that are going on are very, you know, right up there going burn the priests because we believe the accounts of the kids.
I don't remember a bunch of like video evidence or like corroborated statements when it comes to priests. It was pretty much like, okay, some people came forward and said this happened and that's the evidence that you need, you know, like. Legally, I get it. We can't just make a system where one person can make an accusation and that legally convicts someone. I feel like...
Legally, no.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
You can't do that legally.
Right, but we're not talking about law. That's what's so frustrating with these skeptics on my Twitter right now.
Yeah, I know. If enough friends of mine tell me that somebody is a liar, you know, I'm not going to put trust in them.
Yeah, do you want to talk about like how these whisper networks have functioned and maybe it would be nice if they didn't have to exist anymore. Are we anywhere near that?
No. And well, to tell you how they function first to start with, I mean, it's basically just when you meet somebody, you're able to say, hey, look, if you are going to this conference, you need to watch around so-and-so because he's really handsy or this person because this is what they'll try to do. And obviously that doesn't work for everybody, because there are going to be people who aren't in the know, don't talk to the people who know this information. So as much as we can try to get the information out, it's always going to miss people. If we tried to do it publicly, then we'd be open up to huge amounts of lawsuits. Richard Carrier is suing 2 blog networks, a conference, and some individuals for talking about his admitted behavior.
Yeah.
And you know, just trying to silence them. And this is in a movement that prides itself on free speech. Free speech, we're all about free speech, except for these women who are trying to speak up and Richard Carrier suing them. So putting a list out there, I mean, it would be nothing but lawsuits. It would be nice if we could do that. You know, I mean, we could talk about Richard Carrier's behavior because he talked about it. And I'll talk about this lawsuit till, you know, until it's over. I'll tell everybody about it. We could talk about Lawrence Krauss because it's been published and, you know, now he can focus on the journalists instead of us.
Yeah.
And Michael Shermer's the same thing. And that's something I would like to back up just a little bit and point out that leading up to this BuzzFeed article on Lawrence Krauss, he was retweeting, knowing this article was coming out, he was retweeting criticism of the Me Too hashtag.
Yeah, every cookie cutter article of, oh, is it going too far? Is it
right.
Me Too? Have we finally gotten to the point where it's jumped the show? Yeah, okay.
Right. And Michael Shermer's magazine, Skeptic Magazine, was publishing all sorts of stories about how testimonies are bad as evidence because of implanted memories.
Well, yeah, they did the defense of...
Sandusky.
Yeah, the defense of Sandusky.
So, you know, all these people are saying, where's the court conviction? Well, here's one, and they're still going, oh, no, he's innocent.
Yeah, plus I wonder, I mean, by their logic, if somebody, you know, like O.J. Simpson or something, he was found not guilty. So is it just in all our minds, we have to assume not guilty, like no matter what, the court is the final word. We can't react any other way. It's just not how anything works.
Right, right. All the cops, they get off for killing, you know, young unarmed black males.
Didn't happen. Never happened.
Right, right. They're fine. They're not guilty. Yeah. Funny. It always works differently for those than it does for abusers. So yeah.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Are there more Krauses out there right now, you think, where there's going to be another? There could be another story breaking anytime. I mean, I know you don't want to bring up specifics, and I don't want to legally put anybody in jeopardy here, but. What do you think? I mean, is this over? Is this anywhere near started?
Oh, it's definitely not over. It's a start. I mean, it took us 6 years to get to this point where the organizations are finally, you know, saying, hey, maybe we won't have him back.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, literal baby steps here in half a decade of my time. And that's just half a decade that I've been involved. So, yeah, I mean, there will always be more. There will always be more coming because that's our culture. That's what we have here is that we put men in these positions and we teach them that it's okay to do this because there are absolutely no repercussions and no consequences for years and years. Yeah. I mean, look how long it took for Cosby.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they get to have their careers. That's kind of the most annoying thing about this is they get to have their careers. They get to enjoy their success. They get to get older like Weinstein before anybody says, well, maybe they shouldn't, you know, be in the position to do that. In the meantime, all these women are kicked out of their careers. They don't get that. They get harmed by their actions. It's just, it's awful.
Yeah, it's the invisible cost too to a lot of people. Like we don't get a full accounting of how many victims were turned away from jobs or there's no like official numbers on that, but it's very visible when you see someone you like. Like, I mean, I love Krauss's talks. I'm really sad that he turned out to be this guy, you know, because I would love nothing more than just for Krauss to be just a cool dude given awesome, you know, astronomy talks and astrophysics talks, that would be great. Yeah, but
right.
It's like that's the cost you see, you know, you see the cost of, okay, this guy that whose talks I really used to love to watch, he's going to go away now. And then I guess that's where the defenses kick in of like, well, I don't like that. I don't want that to happen. So then it's like, how can I find a way to poke a hole in this theory or that kind of thing? It's kind of a wishful thinking, I guess.
Right. And it's interesting because, I mean, we've elevated what, like five voices up in atheism that everybody wants to hear.
Right.
You know, there are so many more people who have, I'm sure, incredible things to say, but we are so stuck on those five.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, get rid of them, throw them out, get somebody else out there. It'll be cool.
Yeah. Next in line, hopefully. And maybe eventually we'll get to non creepy people.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, I mean, the lady who took Al Franken's place, You know, now she could do his job without grabbing women on the ass. Hey, go figure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so what about the idea that all these women are making it up because he's a celebrity? How does that sit with you?
Oh, yeah, because women want this kind of attention. They want to be driven offline out of harassment because he's... I don't even know where that... I mean, what do they see as the added benefit?
I know. I never understand that part. Like, step one, it's like that... That, you know, step three, profit. But then there's not really the step two, you know, where you get to the profit. I don't know how that works. You get harassed. You get, you know, just absolutely. You could get doxxed. You could get threatened. All that stuff. And then what's the upside of the
right?
You get to convict. You get to convict an innocent person or something. I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not, you it's end not up like having the, to go offline. You know.
Yeah,
whatever.
The accusers don't get Krause's job. It's not like they're the. If we had, that's the thing, like if there was one accusation and it came from the person directly standing to benefit from Krause, you know, like if there was any possible way that it could be like any motivation or anything like that, it would be something to consider. But when you have a bunch of different people for no conceivable gain of their own telling their stories, I don't understand how someone could think that they all just decided to make it up or they'll...
Because he's famous. Yeah. I don't know. It's I really don't get it. But there will always be a motivation. Everybody always sees the motivation. I don't mean everybody, but people will always see motivations in this type of action in coming out and saying, you know, of course, part of that is also due to the fact that we want to blame the victim, because if we can put it on an action that they did, then it removes us from ever having to be in that situation.
Right.
You know, I mean, the classic victim blaming just world kind of thing. If, well, okay, obviously, I know that I'm not going to go to this person's room with him for an interview, even though it's an interview, because I know better. So that's on them. You know, it's hilarious how far we'll go down that road as well. And hilarious in that really sad, haha, kind of funny way.
Yeah, totally. I've heard from actually, I think I had a woman on the show who said, you know, she didn't think it could happen to her. Like, even though she was a feminist and someone who, you know, this is before Me Too, but someone who would have been supportive of Me Too, it's still she didn't think it could happen to her until she realized, like, oh, maybe I had a bit of that internalized, like a little bit of victim blaming still internalized. And it makes sense as like a human response to wanting to not be someone that could ever happen to, like somehow you're going to do all the right things, you know, and it won't ever happen to you.
Well, and we do that too, so that we can't, so we don't blame the person that we like. I mean, look at how we approach cheating in relationships, you know, oh, I'm going after that marriage wrecker. No, talk to your spouse about the fact that they just did something really screwed up.
I will never understand that response. That is a weird response.
it's weird, but I mean, I get it, because you want to blame that person. You don't want to think that, you know, the person that you love and is supposed to love you did this. You want to think that other person made them do it.
Yeah. But yeah, it would be the cognitively easier thing to deal with, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's to me, it's all related. But this is most psych 101, right? I've never been to college. I don't have an idea.
Yeah. Well, so Whisper Network's still around, still dealing with.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, when I was in grade school, kids would tell me what teachers to watch myself around. It's always been a thing. It always will be a thing.
Jeez, that's scary. Well, I guess we can turn it around now to more exciting and positive news here. I know you have an announcement.
Yes, happy announcement. in 2015, Secular Woman and Minnesota Atheist and CASH, a student group, did Secular Women Work, an activist conference that was hugely successful, and we had a great time, and it was wonderful. And today, our Kickstarter just went live to do the same thing again this year in August.
Awesome. Secular Women Work is the name of it?
Secular Women Work, yes. It's, as I said, an activist conference, and basically we will be bringing women and genderqueer people together with experience in activism for presentations and panels and workshops because you know the thing about activism is everybody always ends up reinventing the wheel. You know, you get a person and they come in and they're like, wow, I see something that needs to be done and nobody's doing it. I'm going to do it even though I have no idea how. And they have to learn and start all over, and they don't have the tools and the resources and the knowledge. So we try to bring as many different skill sets together as we can in one place so you can pick that up. And therefore, the whole movement gets more efficient and more effective. So it's so far, we're going to feature Greta Christina, noted author and wonderful all around activist, Jessica Zhao. I think, has she been on your show yet?
If yeah, not, she should be. Yeah, she was on my show.
Yeah, she was. Okay, I thought so. And Mandisa Thomas from Black Nonbelievers, of course, is going to be back with us again. She's always amazing. And as our Kickstarter progresses and we get closer to funding, we'll be announcing more people that will be there as speakers. I'm super pumped about this.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And it's a chance to hear and see some of those voices that maybe weren't getting a chance over the four or five people we decided were the entire movement, huh?
Yeah, you know, the four or five people, whatever, that we hold up, you know, what are they doing now? It's like, yeah, they do activism, they go around and they do presentations. This is a lot more directed at the grassroots level, the people who are doing the work, you know, the people who are going door to door, who are making the phone calls, who are setting up the campaigns. And, you know, usually in activism, that's women.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, they're the ones who are normally doing this stuff.
Excellent. So yeah, I'll definitely include that link in the show notes for the Kickstarter. Congratulations on the launch, and I hope it's a success.
Oh, thank you. Me too. And this is something that definitely supported men as well. And you are also welcome to attend. It was one of the things I always noticed about women in secularism that CFI put on every year, as there are hardly any men in attendance. And it's like, yes, it's focused on what women have to say, but that doesn't mean that you don't need to hear it.
That's awesome. So I just want to have you on to take a bit of a victory lap. I found your Gizmodo at the end when you were quoted, and you said, you know, I certainly hope they don't intend to ignore it and hope everyone forgets, because I will work hard to make sure no one does. So I just wanted to give you a chance. Is there anything else you want to say before we call to a close here?
Well, I would, you know, that quote was speaking specifically about Center for Inquiry, because they haven't made a comment yet. You know, American Humanist Association, American Atheists, SSA, they're all kind of making it known that they're stepping away from Krauss, that, you know, they're taking this seriously. And Lawrence Krauss is listed as an honorary board member of CFI. And I'm speaking as a, you know, president of Secular Woman here. And it's a bit problematic that CFI is sitting there being all kind of whistling, looking the other way. And we're going, well, you know, I don't think they can afford to do that at this time if they want to retain the trust that they want to have with their members and attendees of their conferences. So, you know, that's part of what Secular Woman is about, is to make sure that we are amplifying the voices of secular women. And right now, the voices of secular women are saying, you know, that Krauss guy needs to go. So that's the message we're sending out.
Well, it was a strong statement. It was, I really do hope they come around and say something. I mean, it's, I don't know how much more time you need to review a pretty massive case against someone. Hopefully that happens. Manette, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for thinking of me. In the next piece that someone does of Where Are the Women, you could say, hey, look, I had one on my show.
Yeah, there's a whole convention of them.
Right. You should go and
support
check them out.
Yeah.
And get quotes from them instead of the same men that you quote every time.
Awesome.
No, but seriously, thank you. I do appreciate you inviting me on.
Oh, no problem. My pleasure. Oh, that was a long one. That was a difficult one. These are never fun. I'm always here. Matt, if you do happen to hear this, it's probably a lost cause. That's one more person in a high position that I will no longer have access to. We'll see. That just shows you, by the way, how hard these systems are to break. If I'm getting constant tweet hate for merely supporting an article, imagine how hard it is for victims and for people who actually try to, have been abused, by the way, first sexually harassed or abused, And then second, actually have to go through the process of reporting it, reliving it, that nightmare, and then are still harassed and not believed. Imagine how shitty that must be. So it sucks. It's something we need to change. And you know where to send all the hate mail, @SiriusPod. I'll see you there.